What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hello and welcome to the Katie Halper Show. Please rate and review the show on iTunes. Please become Patreon supporters at patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. You can literally pay $1 a month to help make this show happen. And if you want access to additional and extended interviews, you can pay $5 a month. But really, $1 a month, that's $12 a year. On today's show, my co-host is Jack Allison, and he is the co-host of the Struggle Session podcast, as well as the host of the Jack AM Twitch show. Jack and I are joined by LA Charger and activist Justin Jackson, and Black Agenda Report columnist and editor Margaret Kimberly. The Patreon-only episode for this week is a discussion with Justin about his personal experience with Force the Vote and some online beefing he got into, very respectfully, with some journalists and politicians on Twitter. Also coming out on Patreon is a discussion with Breonna Joy Gray and artist Maria about Bernie's mittens, what book he would have sworn in on if he had been elected president, and I showcase some accents that I can do, or maybe can't do. And you can find all of this on patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Also, Tuesday night, we're doing an emergency broadcast Tuesday night at 8 p.m. EST, and that will be on youtube.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's youtube.com/thekatiehalpershow. Writer and writing instructor Kate Levin will be joining me, and we are going to be breaking down an incredibly important piece by Ingrid Sayer Oki. And it's called Bernie's Mittens, A Lesson for San Francisco High School Students in Subtle White Privilege. And that was published at the San Francisco Chronicle. So Kate Levin and I will be going over this op-ed. And that will be on youtube.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's youtube.com/thekatiehalpershow. Tuesday night at 8 p.m. EST. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Katie Halper Show. How's everyone doing? I'm Katie Halper, and I'm here with Jack Allison. Hello, Jack.
Hello. What's going on? Good to see you, Katie. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. You?
I'm just fine. I'm fine.
Fine. Okay. Well, there is a really great show happening tonight right here, and we're going to be talking to Margaret Kimberly from the Black Agenda Report. She's also the author of a very good book called Prejudential. Yeah, you guys had Margaret on Struggle Session.
At your recommendation, but the book is really excellent.
It's really good, right?
I honestly, we'll talk about it with her, but I think it's a great recommendation as like a kind of mini people's history of the United States.
Yeah.
Like, because that book is kind of like a little bit like daunting. It's so big and so much history in there. I love Prejudential.
Yeah, Prejudential or
Prejudential is a great, great sort of
Black
just
America and the Presidents.
Just a quick history of how America, how every president has been.
Is anti-racist. Every president is an anti-racist. Is a Robin D'Angelo. Oh, right. Sorry, I got it backwards.
Not an anti-racist. No.
I know.
Well,
I'm
kidding. It's only now in 2021 that racism is over.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, exactly. And it happened in, when was he sworn in?
11 days ago.
Yeah. So I feel like, the racism's over.
What a great 11 days, by the way.
What a great 11 days.
We're going to get to that,
but let me just tell people the second amazing guest, okay? And that is Justin Jackson, the LA Charger and also activist. And he's very, very good on and very passionate about Force the Vote. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into that. And if you have a couple of shekels, rubles, rupees, then you can become Patreon supporters at patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. So, again, great show. Margaret Kimberly, Justin Jackson, they're going to be joining us in the first, third, I don't even know what it is, the something segment of the show. But Jack and I are first, we're going to...
oh, we got to bullshit first.
Well, we got to kibitz. Yeah, we definitely got to do that. Yeah. The Dems have a great announcement that they're making. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just say it. I actually want to show it to you guys.
There we are.
All right, there we go. Okay, can you look at that? You look at that beauty.
This is messaging. This is some beautiful messaging. Let's zoom it in.
So let's zoom it in, yeah. So let's see what they wrote. Can you scroll up a bit? Yeah.
POTUS will build on the $600 down payment provided by Congress last year. And we got to be on, well, we'll get into it. Sending an additional $1,400 to households across America, totaling direct payments to $2,000 per person.
Yeah,
and here it is.
Yeah, let's zoom in on
big,
that because you can
text,
see. Yeah, American Rescue Plan will provide $1,400 per person relief checks, and then what? Can you zoom in so we can see what it says?
I can read it, but I don't know if
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, just read it. Yeah.
There we go. I think I can get it actually.
Oh, I see.
Deliver immediate direct relief to Americans. Expand eligibility to adult dependents. And expand and improve delivery of economic impact payments. Wow.
Everyone hear how Jack just said expand? That was his dad's Canadian accent coming out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is amazing messaging, right? I mean, mm-hmm. what does this tell us? Yeah.
Here's the thing, Katie. What I think is so incredible, or what's interesting about this messaging is, you know, if I was someone that worked for the Democrats, you know, it's got to be 5D chess in some way. You know what I mean? This has got to be 14-dimensional chess because... The immediate thing that you'd think if you were putting together messaging for like a political group or something like that is that the number you'd want to put in big, bold letters would be $2,000. Even if the plan is to only send out $1,400, it feels like even if you're trying to pull that bullshit, you should write $2,000 in the image and then say in the text, like it's 2,000 minus 600 or whatever.
Right.
The thing is, what's actually so brilliant about this, Katie, this is a brilliant step toward actually only giving us $800 because they don't want to give us $1,400. You know what I mean? If they wrote $2,000, you know, and they've been talking about $2,000, that would be the point. That'd be the start of the negotiation to get us to a $1,400. Making such a big stink about $1,400 is a great way to get everybody ready for them to only give us $1,000 when when the Republicans demand that. That's literally what I actually think it is now. Like them raising such a stink about it and actually shifting the goalpost to $1,400 is so that we can be okay with it when they move it down to only $1,000 or $800.
Again, it's like, I don't know. Do they really think that like, I guess they really know that the left, and we're going to talk about this a lot with our guests later on, but the left just won't go anywhere.
You know.
Right? So they don't fear any defection or losing people?
I think the left in this country is weak. I don't know what to say. Like, you know what I mean? The left is very, very weak in this country. And, you know, I don't think they give a shit about us is really what I think.
No, of course they don't.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't even think that they care at all about the left, even as like a voting block. You know what I mean? Like this, this is as much like putting the boot to the mouth of the left as it is like setting themselves up to negotiate down to 800. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I'm also going to say like, they're going to fucking lose. Like they're going to lose the midterms. Like they're going to lose the midterms and they deserve to lose, and they want to lose. You know what I mean? Like, they don't want to govern. Like, this is a very tricky position for them to be in, actually controlling, you know, all three branches of government or whatever. That's a tricky position to not do anything in.
They can no longer blame it on the Republicans, which is what they love doing.
Because I swear to God, they're going to run in 2022 when COVID is still not gone, by the way, because it's not going to be gone because they're just... Katie, they're going to give everybody the 2/3 vaccine and then be like, get back to work.
Yeah. Yeah, that is
I'm gonna
so
say
disgusting.
Something, I'm going to say something that will get clipped by the people who like to pull clips of the dumb
hi,
left.
Hi, Queen. Stuff like that. What are they named? Yeah.
Queen in Yellow or whoever the hell.
And that other Dimitri guy. Dimitri.
Matt Dimitri. This one's for you, buddy. This one's for Matt Dimitri. I miss Trump. And I'll tell you why.
He said it.
I'll tell you why. At least when Trump was president, everybody fucking hated the president for doing a bad job.
Yeah, and we all
hated the president for doing a bad job. And now we've got the exact same COVID plan, which is go back to work, go back to school, and nobody gives a shit about it. We're getting articles that are like, Biden has done more in his first 10 days than Trump did in his first 4 years. I don't miss the policies of Trump, but they're the same as the fucking policies today. None of the kids have been, no one's getting reunited. There's no plan to reunite any of the kids. We're not getting any fucking money. I miss when the media hated the president.
That is well said. And someone out there, I want this clip now. Clip it out. Redirect here.
That one's for Matt Dimitri.
No,
please,
but we need to I want to co-op Jack. I want to reclaim Jack. I want to reclaim this argument because honestly, it's really true. And whatever your thoughts on Trump versus Biden are, it is 100% true that people are not vigilant. They're not. And the left is powerless. And so I don't know what we're going to do, except maybe we'll lose. Maybe we got it. I kind of think we have to do third party next time. I do. I'm sorry. I think we're going to have to.
Katie, I'm never, ever going to vote for a Democrat again in my life.
Yeah.
That's really how I'm feeling these days. And I got shamed a lot about it last time. I think that I don't have to. I live in California. Maybe I'll vote for a Democrat if there's someone local that I really like or something like that. But I'm never going to vote for a Democrat again in my entire life. And anyone who fucking respects themselves shouldn't either, because this kind of rope-a-dope, like playing with people's lives, like in a situation like this, giving $1,400 when Trump gave $1,800, Trump gave $1,800 and we're going to fucking get negotiated down to 1,000.
Yeah. And the sending back to work. I mean, I guess there's talk of like a defense act, right? Where
so they're gonna do the defense act or whatever to get the masks made, and I think that is ultimately a good thing. But they're also really moving very fast on getting kids back to school, and a lot of this is based on a CDC study that they keep citing. They keep citing the CDC study that says it may be safe for kids to go back to school. But that CDC study, when you actually look at it, says it may be safe to go for kids to go back to school with social distancing if all the businesses are shut down. If we're shutting down spread in every other way. Never going to happen. Never going to happen.
Not only never going to happen, but it's being encouraged by Democrats.
Where Democrats are reopening. I live in fucking California. I live in like the liberal utopia of the world. And I am walking down the street today and the restaurants are packed. It's packed out there. Every single restaurant is out on the streets, you know, just like full of people. The streets in Beverly Hills are just full of restaurants. But it's not only the rich people. If you go over to Los Feliz, it's like every fucking people want. Here's the thing. And it's hard for me to even blame the people, the individuals.
Yeah,
on this.
No.
You know what I mean? I think it is irresponsible to go out to a restaurant, but I'm not even mad at those people. I'm mad at the government for like leaving us for a fucking year without any assistance and closing all the restaurants and saying like, you're actually not even allowed to go to parks. Like, I actually think that's insane. Like, he shut down the parks and then reopened the restaurants.
Who's he? Gavin Newsom?
Newsom and fucking Garcetti. You know what I mean? Like,
and why when everything did they
was
do
shut
that?
Down, why did they? Why when, they shut down the parks and why? Then they drove everybody insane. I don't know. I have no idea. I maybe just because they were like, well, we don't want people to do anything if the businesses aren't open. That's another problem here in California is Gavin Newsom does all these conversations behind closed doors. Like, he just comes out and tells us we're reopening. And, you know, it's like I hate Governor Cuomo and I think he's evil and obviously like, you know, underreported nursing home deaths and everything like that. And I think his big press conferences.
And gave them immunity first, remember?
And he gave them immunity from litigation before letting them kill everybody's grandparents and then underreporting those.
Yeah, he definitely has blood on. I mean, not just so we know, he directly. 100%
he's got grandma blood
on
all over his
grandma
hands.
Grandma and grandpa blood all over his hands. Yeah,
he's got grandma blood all over his hands. But what Newsom, but at least Cuomo goes on TV and makes us all aware of what his dumb idiot guy reasoning is. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
at least he goes on TV.
He hides it, but he then when he gets what he does do is he nobody ever benefited more from Trump than the Democrats, because mm-hmm. all Cuomo had to do was speak in rational, logical sentences. They didn't even have to be honest. He just had to not suggest injecting bleach. And exactly. because of that, he was a man of reason, and you know, he was rational, logical. He had things under control, and people felt very. See, I almost think though it's dangerous in the similar way that Biden is dangerous, and that everyone is kind of duped, and they think he's a good guy.
Right. No. I agree. Listen, all I was trying to say is this: like, yeah. I think Cuomo.
You are a Cuomo.
I think
Cuomo apologist. Yeah.
I think Cuomo's press conferences are an absolute joke. It's ridiculous that he won the Emmys for it. The only comparison I'm trying to make is Gavin Newsom just makes decisions and comes out and is like, "Here's the decision." Right. And he doesn't tell anybody. He's just running the state like a CEO, like a technocrat CEO. We don't get to know why he's reopening. It just happens all of a sudden that the state is reopening and everybody has to scramble and nobody even knows the reason why.
Yeah. Matt P. asks, is this an argument on who's the worst liberal governor? It could be. So who do we got? We have Gavin Newsom. We should have people vote. We got Newsom.
Newsom and Cuomo are like the top tier. Those are top tier, like liberal. Liberals love them. Yeah. They're thought of as doing so great.
They're good on social issues. I mean, you can't be good on social issues when you're enforcing austerity, which is 100. Maria just said it's Gavin. Are you saying that's the worst?
I thought I mispronounced it. No, yeah. I think it's the worst one.
Now, I'm a New Yorker, and Maria, everyone say hi to Maria and Brad behind the scenes right now. I mean, you guys overtly can say hi to them, but they're behind the scenes. I'm from New York. Maria's from California, so she may be engaging in some state nationalism.
See, all of us are. That's what I'm doing too. I'm like, right. Gavin's the worst. You know. I mean, they're both equally very, very bad. The other thing I'd say is this.
I'm going to do a Twitter vote right now, and we'll read the results. Yep.
Yeah, let's
do it. Who is the worst liberal governor?
Yeah.
Who is the worst? Tough. Who is the worser? How do I say this?
I think worse. Who is the worst? Yeah, worse is the right way to say it. Well, unless you're trying to say who is the worst. Are you trying to ask which one is worse of the two?
Yeah, the two. Yeah.
So then it's just the E.
Yeah. Okay, great. All righty. I tweeted it out. We're good. This is not going to be our you know how last week we did a great. Oh, Jack, we did well. Did you see this?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Pretty well. Yeah, when we tweeted out, we blamed Glenn Greenwald for, what's her name, Lauren Wolf's firing.
Yes. Yeah,
and that was good. We did a live tweet. So I think we should do a live tweet. Actually, what I would like us to do tonight is do a live tweet where we tweet as if we are the Dems. Like, I want us to do GIFs and images of the Dems announcing other things, like the 1400. The other day we showed Jen Psaki saying that he is a devout Catholic, and so I was thinking how we could make like a cutesy image of that, like a cutesy, like that's a pretty gif, like do you know what I'm saying? Like, I want, so my, so good friend of the show, Josh Bregman, pointed out that like the Dems right now, the president is the opposite of what it used to be, because it used to be that Trump was insane on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And now it's actually just like policy announcements on Twitter.
You know, honestly, what I think would be a good gimmick Twitter account, and I'm giving up Twitter this year, Katie. I'm done.
Yeah. Well, you say that a lot. You're like in an abusive relationship.
I shan't do it ever again. I say it now before everybody. I say it now before 1,000 people. I won't be on that wretched website. I got to be honest with you. I think it died when Trump left, and I would have left then, but I didn't want to like, but all the conservatives were leaving and I didn't want to do it then because everyone would be like, Jack's a conservative too, or whatever. But what I think would be a good gimmick account is if you did like if Biden tweeted like Trump. You know what I mean? Because I think that would show everybody that it's the same. You know what I mean? If it was like $1,400, then back to work, you know, something like that.
This is the greatest country on earth. Yeah, let's do that now. Let's do if Biden tweeted like Trump, that's good.
That's a good gimmick account. You know what
that's
I mean?
That's a good gimmick account.
Because you could take all the policies, literally every tweet that Biden does, and then just write it in the Trump style or whatever.
Yeah, let's do it. Guys, we need a graphic. And today's live tweet of the day is, what we will do right now is we will do if Biden tweeted like Trump.
Yes, if Biden tweeted like Trump. Okay, so let me pull up Joe Biden's Twitter and have a look.
Well, there's also POTUS.
Oh yes, the at POTUS account. That's
so we
got to
cover maybe both of those. So
I think POTUS is the one that's the best.
I think that's
one.
It. That is it, Chief. Awesome. Okay, so let's do this. So what are we doing? We're doing.
I'm trying to find a good tweet,
guys.
For,
give us
for Biden.
If Trump, but what's the hashtag? I'm taking. What is it? I'm bringing hashtags back.
Oh yeah, we're bringing hashtags. I'm bringing hashtags back. Okay, that's fine.
I couldn't even make that a hashtag. Yeah. So if Biden tweeted like Trump, right? Is that a good hashtag?
How about this?
All right.
I mean, literally, I'm sending you I can share. I'll just share the screen, actually. One second here. Let me do that. I have it here. It says, the sooner we get our kids and educators back in the classroom, the sooner parents can go back to work. But we need the funding to do it. My American Rescue Plan.
Wait, let me get this. I think you can. Now you try to share the screen.
Oh, okay. Okay. So where is it again to do the screen share? Do I have to go to my.
Or if you just put it in.
Oh, it's here at the bottom. I found it. Sorry. One sec.
988, guys. We got to bring people into the. Okay.
The sooner we get our kids and educators back in the classroom, the sooner parents can go back to work. But we need the funding to do it.
Can you send me the link? Sorry. Can you DM me or put it in the chat?
I'm putting it in the private chat here. There we go. My American Rescue Plan will deliver much needed support to our nation's schools to help them reopen and operate safely.
Okay. So let's do this as a Trump. Should I do a quote tweet of this or a screenshot?
You know, I think a quote tweet of this would work.
All right,
work,
so let me.
So let's right, quote tweet this.
All right. So,
okay, so maybe if Biden tweeted like Trump.
If Biden tweeted like Trump.
But I don't know if you want to do your hashtag.
What do you think?
Maybe just if Biden tweeted like Trump and then the you know, colon perhaps. Or,
oh,
yeah,
colon,
then,
yeah.
An ellipsis is good, too.
Colon's better.
All right. I think it's like, you know, we need kids back in school so that parents can get all caps back to work.
But it has to be like beautiful, healthy. Our American kids the beautiful, right?
We need our beautiful American kids back in school so that parents can get back to work.
American kids are the most beautiful, healthy.
What
specimens he wouldn't say.
Are the most beautiful, healthy.
What'd he say?
Are the most beautiful. Okay. America has the most beautiful and healthy kids in the world. America has the most beautiful and healthy kids in the world.
Oh, wait. He wouldn't do it. Okay. America has the greatest.
That has the greatest, most beautiful and healthy kids in the world.
Keep right end, right?
Yeah. And healthy kids. I even like the capital K for kids. Just as a weird. In the world,
kids. All right, get them back to school.
Like, get them back to school so we can get parents back to work. All capitals.
Something about how they're miserable. You know what I mean? Like, they're miserable at home.
They're miserable at home. Yeah, they're miserable at home.
It's a travesty. Would he say that?
It's outrageous. Okay. Yeah, it's an outrage. Get them to school so that the parents can get back to work.
So,
parents,
America. Don't you think America?
Yeah, America.
So American parents?
Yeah. Can get back to work, all capitals.
Who are the best and brightest or something?
Who are the best and brightest? Sure.
Can get back to work. Does he say stuff like God bless America?
I was going to even say toward the end, it's like, Congress must pass the American Rescue Plan. What are you doing? Congress must pass the American Rescue Plan. What are you doing?
Shame. What is American? Corrupt, right? Corrupt losers. Congress
losers.
Must pass the American Rescue
Plan. Oh, you're out of space.
Yeah, we'll do it. Hold on. If Biden tweeted like Trump. All right. America has the greatest, most beautiful, and health.
Maybe we don't need beautiful. Maybe just the greatest.
It's pretty good. I think we need it. They're miserable at home. Get them.
Maybe
and they're suffering at home or something.
I mean, we're not going to save us. And they're bored at home. And they're bored. And then
get them to school so American parents, who are the best and brightest, can get back to work.
I think you need to do back to work, all capitals with 3 exclamation points. Actually. Congress must pass the American Rescue Plan.
What about corrupt losers?
Corrupt Congress. Losers? There we go. And fix rescue. It says rescue.
Where is that?
Second and last word.
Oh, thank you.
You've transposed the sea.
Okay. God bless America. USA. Does he ever do USA, USA? Let's see
maybe
if anyone
has
any.
Maybe just throw a USA.
Okay. If anyone has any.
Characters. There you go. Perfect.
Let's see if anyone has any really good. If anyone has really good suggestions, let us know. Yeah, Garden Gnome is saying find an actual Trump tree and build it from there. But we don't have time. We'll go back
on,
to
we got
to
get Margaret on.
We got to get Margaret on. Yeah. How many? I don't know how many subscribers this channel has, but we got to bump it up. Okay, so Maria is saying this is good, and let's just do it.
Let's just send it.
I think we should do it.
Remove the open quote. It will bother me otherwise.
Oh.
You have an open quote after the colon. We can't close it, so just remove it.
Oh, got it. Yeah, I think
or
that's
you can,
right.
You can put a line break if you want.
Oh, a space?
No, just put a press return and do a line
that's
break.
That's what I meant.
That's what we're talking about.
Now that's it. That's, no, that's we don't want people we don't want to deprive them, right?
Now that's a tweet. Now that's a tweet.
Oh, right should there. I add one? Maria's saying use a colon. Should I add one? Please add to your please add your own. Or is that too please add your own?
Yeah, sure. That's good.
Add your own what? If Biden
please add your own and then maybe put the hashtag if Biden tweeted like Trump.
Yeah. And you know, we're just going to hashtag it up. I don't care. All right. That's it, right? And then,
there
you know what? And we will read them. Is that too self-promoing?
We'll read them on the show. Why not? See, you live in capitalist America. You got to do bullshit like that. You know?
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Okay. So now what do I do? That's it, right? Oh, I got a link to the show. That's it. And then we'll be done. And we'll bring in Margaret. We're going to bring in our first guest, and boy, are we excited. She's great. Her name is Margaret Kimberly. She is a senior columnist and editor at Black Agenda Report and also the author of Prejudential, Black America and the Presidents. Hello, Margaret.
Hi, guys.
Hi, how are you?
Good to see you.
Good.
Thank you for joining us. You are...
Thank you for having me back. You were one of the first people to help promote my book.
There you go.
About this time, and here it is. I just put it in front of my face.
Wow, that's marketing. That's marketing.
But yeah, you...
I was trying to market a book during a pandemic. It was kind of... I have to do what I can.
Yes,
Prejudential, Black America and the Presidents. It was published... February 4th, so it's almost the first anniversary.
Mom.
And we're still talking about presidents, aren't we? You know.
Yeah. And racism is, I thought it was over, but apparently not.
We have our first non-racist president, right? I mean, like, this would be this would be a tough chapter to write, you know, if you wanted to keep writing it.
Weren't we post-racial after Obama?
Yeah, that's
right. Right.
So there was 8 years of post-racialism, and then there was 4 years of abject overt racism, and now we're post-racial again. Come on, no more.
We keep going back from being done with racism to it comes back. You know, it's like Jaws, or it's like an end of like a slasher movie or something.
It is, and it's still there, but it just goes to show you how stupid it was to talk about a post-racial country because of Obama.
And Jan is saying, Margaret, still love the propaganda panel you did with Blumenthal, Mate, and Lee Camp. Yeah, I was there. It was a great panel.
Yes. Yeah. November 2019. Thank you so much, Jan. It was great. It was, we had a great evening, big crowd of people. And
it was at the People's Church. Was that where it was? The People's Church?
It's the community church. It's on East Side, East 30.
Yeah. East 30. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And, yeah,
and I quote tweeted you, and you said something. You called Malcolm Nance like a bozo or something, I think. So I quote tweeted
you. I said
you.
Bozo. I didn't come up with anything better than that.
I think it was probably bozo is pretty good. It's low key good.
Bozo's a funny. Hold on a second, I'm turning up the heat. 1 second. Well, bozo's like a funny way to.
He is such a charlatan. It's like I made all the wrong decisions in life. If I just babbled nonsense about Russia, I could be making a fortune now.
I know.
I love when people say we're being paid, like you or like Glenn Greenwald, Matt Taibbi. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish, but no, I don't hold a candle to Malcolm Nance. He should be kissing Russia's flag every morning.
I know. It's really ridiculous. Yeah. So you have some really amazing pieces at Black Agenda Report. And we can, of course, there's so much to talk about. We can talk about anything you want to talk about. But I was really, I loved your, three of your pieces that I loved were Black Demands for the Biden Administration. You also had pro-Biden propaganda. And then you had a really interesting one, which was about censorship, censorship in the Biden era. So should we start with the propaganda one? I think that that's probably
sure. It's it's so obvious, you know, with Trump gone, whoever came after Trump was going to get a lot of cheap praise anyhow. But it's really been over the top. I mean, the inauguration day, it's like, oh my God, the first ladies wore purple. And then there was the young poet, and Biden has, he's Catholic, he goes to church, he's got dogs, he loves his wife. He's, it's just sickening to me. But the corporate media are his people, they're on his side. And so we just get these ridiculous tropes. We get lies told on his behalf. Or, I mean, do the New York Times and Washington Post point out that he said $2,000? I mean, he's on record as saying the stimulus was going to be $2,000, not we're going to subtract $600 from $2,000. But he's getting away with it. It's like, look at all his executive orders. And so first he was going to put drilling on federal lands on pause. And then just like, I think it was Friday, there were all these new leases that the federal government gave for oil and gas drilling. So, but we're seeing a lot of, I mean, it's a replay of Obama actually, where he can get away with anything. It's very frightening to me if, you make nice with the corporate media, which Trump wasn't smart enough to do. If you make nice with the corporate media and have the right friends, nobody cares what you did. So that Obama, for example, destroyed the nation of Libya, which created an ongoing humanitarian crisis in the Mediterranean, caused also by his attempt to destroy Syria. But you see stories about this migrant crisis in the Mediterranean that don't mention his name and don't mention the word Libya. That's what happens when they like you. And that's where we are with Biden. It looks like he's going to continue the regime change efforts, the sanctions, all the things that Trump did that were so terrible. But although I have to say, when it came to foreign policy, the corporate media would back Trump up. So
Only when he was doing something more belligerent. Like, they didn't back him up, right, when he was considering, when, like, ratcheting, scaling things back. That was when he was doing it for Russia.
He was a Russian traitor.
Right.
And they're currently undermining these efforts at a peace deal with the Taliban in Afghanistan because he's meaner. He's tough with Russia. And people have been praising him because of this alleged, you know, mean phone call he had with the Vladimir Putin.
Good God.
So it's, although Trump, you know, for all his, what did they say? He does everything Putin wants and all roads lead to Putin. Wasn't that Nancy Pelosi?
Nancy Pelosi,
But he increased NATO spending, wouldn't sign the treaties the Russians wanted to sign, sanctioned Russian officials. And all of this was supposed to be doing what Putin wanted.
I was going
to
say, like, honestly, like, if Russia had, if they were really cultivating an asset over 20 years and finally got them to be the president, what a bad return on investment. Truly, bad return.
Those nefarious Russians apparently aren't very smart. Now they're saying it's 40 years. Now it's again that somebody's written some stupid book about
the
guard.
Yeah, that
the Russians have been cultivating him since the 80s. When he first went to Russia in an effort to build a Trump Tower there and failed, he went to Russia several times and failed every time to build something in Moscow.
Right.
So and clearly they didn't care for all that cultivation, didn't really care about him that much.
Right.
And also,
Nancy
Pelosi
said that about the Capitol revolt. Sorry.
Oh, no, no, no. What did she say?
Just Nancy Pelosi said that about the Capitol riot, the day of the
Hillary,
riot.
It was on Hillary's show.
On Hillary's show,
which, you know what it is called? It's called You and Me Both. which is hilarious, first of all. I love it. You and me both. Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton said she'd love to see his phone records. And Nancy Pelosi, because she's like, and I'd love to see if he was on the phone with Putin during the Capitol riots. And then Pelosi literally is like, and we clip this so you can find it on YouTube, because Leslie Lee and Matt Chrisman and I all responded to it. And Pelosi says, well, you remember that day that I was so rude to him in my blue suit?
Dude, like,
You're not supposed to say that.
She said, remember when I rudely pointed to him?
Oh, that's
when I was
it.
Wearing that blue,
my blue suit.
Yeah, she actually said rudely pointed. I'm like, that is how I would sarcastically describe
the
what you did.
That's,
and you're saying it.
Yes, exactly.
And talked about the colors she was wearing.
Exactly.
Yes, she was like,
you know, it was, I thought it was hilarious when Hillary said we should see his phone records, and Nancy Pelosi, who, and I wondered if you could read her mind. She's probably rolling her eyes saying, this again, Russia again.
Right.
But there's no way that, I don't even know if Hillary Clinton still believes this. I think she can't cope with the fact that she, after all those years of scheming, her turn came along and she screwed it up.
Right.
Because she couldn't get 78,000 votes in the right places. But yeah, it's this is never going to end. We see the cheap praise of Biden already, the covering up for him already, and it's going to be a long 4 years, and a very dangerous 4 years.
Yes.
Because people will start to say, ask a question, and why is it 1400 supposed to be 2000? But then it's, give him a chance, he just started, what do you want, Trump? But Trump, well, you can't get everything.
Yes, but Trump, exactly.
Honestly, at this point, we're 10% through the first 100 days. You know, like, how long has he just started? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Presidents have a lot of power, you know. They can do a lot without Congress. Trump did. That was one of the things he did, not to do anything I wanted him to do. But mm-hmm. Biden is already coasting along with the fact that that Trump is gone. They're calling him a healer. That makes me crazy. He's not a preacher. He's not a doctor. He's supposed to govern. People voted for him to do the things they wanted him to do. That's his job. And he'll heal the country if he does what most people want him to do.
Right, like $2,000 or more?
Yes. Yeah. Or the minimum wage, $15 an hour minimum wage in 2025.
Yeah. After two, that's just trying to create issues for the next two elections. That's just them saying, like, right, oh, here's what we want to run on. I want to run on the $15 minimum wage. And, right, you know, we're going to, that's also saying, like, we have to keep all these levers of power that whole time, because it will get stripped back otherwise. Okay. Saying that you want a $15 minimum wage in 2025 is as good as saying we don't want to do a $15 minimum wage.
Well, we know that. I was listening to your conversation. They don't care about us. They're not afraid of us. They have no fear of progressives. Republicans, on the other hand, are terrified of their voters.
Yeah.
And with good reason. They showed up with guns at the Capitol.
Well, you know? But they, you know, and the few who were willing to say Trump should be impeached or in any way condemn what happened in the Capitol on January 6th, now have hell to pay. They are being primaried. People are already talking about getting rid of them. But lefts are, we're the most not active activists.
Right.
I mean, just, I'm not saying we...
And you wrote a piece about that too, yeah.
Yeah, storm the Capitol. But I doubt very much that the left could get the same number of people in Washington on any issue.
Right.
And that is why we, but I also have to say, I'm green already. I did not vote for Biden. But I think we cannot keep going around and around in this circle where people get angry with the Democrat who never does what we want them to do, but then come right back around and say, well, there's nothing we can do. Excuse me, you can't be a spoiler. There's harm reduction. Trump is the very worst ever. You have no choice but to support these people. And we have to look outside the electoral process in order to bring about change. We can't, they're not going to do it. The progressives, the squad, the progressive caucus, the black caucus, all these caucuses, they never do what we want them to do, because the Nancy Pelosi's of the world are there to make sure that they don't. Nancy Pelosi's job is to raise money and beat up progressives. And of course, the two things are linked. And the system is set up to make sure that if they, even if they are serious about wanting to do the people's business, that they cannot do it. Mm-hmm. And that's something that progressives have got to accept and accept the responsibility of acting without them.
Yeah. And I just wanted to, by the way, because a picture is worth a thousand words, right? I wanted to show you guys this act of resistance because I think that it's really not fair. Nancy Pelosi, a lot of people talk about her ripping up Trump's speech, and that every page she ripped up freed another child from a cage. And everyone likes to talk about how she clapped, and we know that when she clapped, that did what? That gave, I don't know, put a trans person into the army. But people have not spoken enough about this. Hold on. I really want to make sure people have seen this because we got to give credit where credit is due. This is from Wired, which does,
that's right, she's pointing.
That's her rudely pointing.
That's
at
the
Trump.
Rudely pointing
yeah,
moment.
While you were offline, Trump executes perfect self-own with Pelosi tweet.
This okay, is when the I president's rudely attack. Point, this is when quite, I was rudely pointing at him in my blue dress.
The president's attack didn't quite go over as planned. Yeah, look at that. Owned. That's it, guys. This is it. That's it. That is when Nancy Pelosi, I don't know, what did she get done? What happened because of this?
But they always gave him what he wanted.
I know, the war budget.
There's the effort to cut the defense budget by just 10% failed.
Right.
With Democrats joining Republicans. Everything Trump wanted, he got from them. So all this performance is just, it's insulting.
It's so insulting. It's really sordid. It's really gross. And it goes back to what Jack was saying earlier. And what you talk about a lot, Margaret, which is the danger of these alleged allies. Like, people don't have their eye on the ball with these people.
No. We don't have any friends. Like, what do they say in Washington? If you want a friend, get a dog. I mean, I guess that's true for us. We definitely don't have any friends. The military industrial complex have friends. The CEO of, I don't know, McDonnell Douglas Raytheon, one of them said, I don't really care who wins. I mean, I'm paraphrasing.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, he's got no reason to worry.
Because Biden said nothing would fundamentally change. Yeah. You know, he told them the truth.
Right. So, you know, that's the situation we're in. We live in a dictatorship of money, the dictatorship of the billionaires. The billionaires is...
The billionaires, as Amo Bernie would say. Yeah.
As Bernie would
rest
say.
Rest in peace.
But
because he sold out this weekend.
I love Bernie still.
Oh, yeah,
he's under so many pressures and everything like that. But of course, it fucking kills me to see him being like 12,000 minus 600. I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah, why?
I know. Just stop. He capitulated. He did. He made his decision. I'm not even going to beat up on him for it, but enough already.
He did it.
He made his choice, and we have to try
to move on. It's time to move on.
We have to move on too, and couple ourselves from these Democrats who always disappoint us. They're always going to disappoint us. If you care about humanity, if you want a peaceful world, if you want the United States to stop interfering in other countries, if you want to get the things that we want, then you've got to stop, hoping that someday some person will come along who's going to rescue us. And there's no rescue. We're our rescuers. We've got to figure out how to do it.
Right. Do any the propaganda examples that you cite in your piece, any of them stand out as particularly bad?
I think everything said about the inauguration, which is just so like a painful, stupid ceremony. I'm sorry. It's like three people singing. Then there's a poet. Then there's a prayer. Then how many prayers were there? I'm sorry. Clearly, I'm just, just
listen. I feel the same way. I'm like, we just watched the pig president do all this stuff. How do we still take this shit seriously? How we just watched Trump do all this pomp and circumstance, and yet we're still like, wow, it's cool to watch the president look at fireworks. I'm like, the whole thing has literally been like covered in diarrhea. You know what I mean? And you're still acting like it's the same as it was.
And right away, what did people say? If any of us raise these issues, can't you let us enjoy ourselves?
Yeah, right.
We have just one day, but it's never just one day. And it just goes on and on and on. So I'm sorry if I was the killjoy, you know, bringing a skunk to the party. Too bad.
We need more skunks.
Yes, we do. Yes,
that's
we do.
Right.
Yeah, do you remember this one? The CNN's political director. The lights on the mall were like Biden's arms embracing the nation. He said that. Maybe a repressed memory, because honestly, it's pretty bad. But yeah, they said that about the memorial that they did, representing all the people who died. And he stood there, and Kamala stood there. And
then they went to the tomb. Was it the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier? I was like, why?
Watching them walk around DC to all these stupid places, I'm like, it's like fucking Disneyland. They're like, oh, we're going over to the Tomb of the Soldier, then the big statue. It's stupid. Stupid.
That tells you how unserious they are about doing people's business. That's the point of that, to lull you, to get you to forget, to get you to just say, and it wasn't that hard 2 weeks after Trump's people, you know, rushed into the Capitol to do God knows what. He already had this bit of a honeymoon anyway, and everybody was nervous. It's like, is Trump? I thought Trump was going to try to start a war before he left office. That was my fear.
But
none of those things happened. It was like, oh, sigh of relief. Trump is gone. And but they laid it on thick. They did not let up for a moment. And they're still doing it for him.
And then can you talk about your censorship article, censorship in the Biden era?
I think I was writing about the Hunter Biden story in Twitter.
You talk about Hunter Biden, and then you bring up where is it? Yeah, this is pretty good. It's like, really, isn't it? It's kind of weird when you feel like you're not, you're defending Trump, but it's like, oddly, because the media is so bad and biased and was so against Trump for the wrong reasons and for him for the wrong reasons. Like Ronnie Kalik is like, the liberal media hates Trump unless he's bombing a country, then they love him.
Just a reminder about Hunter Biden, his, you know, Biden's dumb son, who, I know people struggling with addiction, but he's also dumb. Let's just say that.
I feel bad. My heart goes out to him.
He gets, you know, $50,000 a month.
Yeah, listen, it's like
the board of a Ukrainian company.
It's fun to kind of joke about how Hunter's fun and everything like that, but he really is a fucking scumbag. You know what I mean?
I thought you liked him. I thought we wanted people to get treated the way he did.
Listen, yes, you want people to be treated the way he's treated that have addiction, but no, you don't want anyone who's related to anyone in politics to be treated the way he is and go get $50,000 a month.
The addiction part, yeah.
But then he was, you know, so high or so dumb or whatever. He leaves his laptop in Delaware someplace. And unfortunately, Rudy Giuliani, of course, everything he touches turns to mush, and he couldn't even manage that. But Twitter censored the story. So the New York Post ran with the story that, and it was very interesting to me. Hunter Biden, the Biden campaign, nobody said, well, this was hacked or this isn't real. They really didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. But Twitter said, no, they could not let anybody link to the story, letting us know that they wanted Joe Biden to win. Instead of just reporting, allowing people, which is what social media platforms are supposed to do, letting everyone weigh in and give their 2 cents, they censored the story. Facebook did as well.
I got censored when I tweeted about it.
I honestly, and this came, you know, long before Trump himself got banned on Twitter. I think that this individual thing, the blocking of the individual New York Post story about Hunter Biden, is so much more frightening censorship than even when Trump got banned.
Absolutely, it is. And because they were clearly taking sides. Mm-hmm. And at that time, there was always, just report what Trump says.
Yeah.
So they would say, Trump said Everything he says is a lie.
Right.
Well, do reporting, have analysis, have somebody say the president said X, but actually Y is true.
Right.
Instead of just telling us what to think about him, just report the news. And that is what they have been doing basically all along. And it only accelerated after Election Day. So you can say, you know, Rudy Giuliani was laughed out of every courtroom, every state legislature. Just report it. Just report what was said instead of the president said something that's not true. That's not journalism. That is not news. And that is why I find it troubling that Twitter banned him, because they are also, and those of us who are concerned about censorship of the left, which is far more prevalent, that they just decide that a certain government official can't be on Twitter or Facebook, left-wing groups being kicked off without explanation, without recourse. I know a lot of people who were kicked off of Facebook, especially the last few weeks, and then inexplicably, they would be allowed back on. When they never knew why they were kicked off in the first place.
Right.
So these platforms should be regulated. They should be treated as public utilities, because no one can live without anybody who wants to express themselves, sell something, market themselves, has to use social media. So I believe they're public utilities, and they ought to be regulated as such. The idea of just giving these guys permission to do whatever they want to do is very, very dangerous.
Like, they're good guys. Like, Mark Zuckerberg is a good guy. Like, corporate overlords are good people. Also, this is really a really important point, which you say... Oh, actually, Margaret, I have a question for you. Because something that when I bring up what you were just saying about how the left is going to get... already is censored more, and this will make it even worse. Sometimes people are like, yeah, but that already happened, so who cares? Let them do it to the right. What's your response to that?
Well, they do it to the right. I think we're the real target, frankly. Yeah. So if they deplatform Alex Jones, who's you know, a bozo, I'll use that word for him, and a clown, and people say, good. I don't care if Alex Jones has a platform. I don't care if Steve Bannon has a platform.
Right, yeah.
Let them speak. Let us speak. But they always pick someone who is not going to be defended. And so people will either, they're either glad Alex Jones is gone, or they don't care.
Right.
But the next thing you know, somebody you do want to hear from gets kicked off. I remember when Twitter at one point they took away Julian Assange's mother, took away her account. I knew they were about to snatch him, because they suddenly her account disappeared. They got orders from the top. They got orders from the state. There are Iranian news, press TV Iran is still not all back on YouTube. All those videos have been erased. Why can't people hear from the government of Iran if they want to? I can watch the BBC if I want to. U.S. corporate media is pretty much state-run media. I mean, let's be honest. So I believe we're always the real target. I don't think that the right are the target. I think it's us. And people get confused easily. They accuse you of defending Trump or defending fascists, or you're the real fat, whatever, something stupid.
Yeah.
Instead of thinking, really thinking about what it means to be silenced like this, because if they don't let you on social media, you've been disappeared.
Right. Right. It doesn't. And I think that when people make the point, well, they're already doing it to the left. But it'll get worse. Like, it gets normalized, and people lift their guards up, right? And they're like, oh, this is a good thing, because look, they're kicking off Alex Jones. So we like that. I'm going to bring in the next guest, but very quickly, I'm going to I'm going to play a video, because I want people, make sure that people know that Lincoln Project, they got busted this weekend. One of their top guys. God. Turns out engaged in a lot of sexual harassment. I'm actually waiting for them to say, yeah, but he's gay, so actually it's an LGBTQ rights thing. That's what I'm waiting. That's the woke washing, by the way. Guys, spread the term. That's the woke washing I'm waiting for. So while I'm going to play this video, and then we're going to bring in Justin Jackson, and he's going to join our chat. But very quickly, going to play a video of a really great video by the Lincoln Project. And they are, of course, they are, of course, a neocon PAC, super PAC. Are they a super PAC or are they just a bunch of terrible people? I think
they're a bunch of terrible
grifters. Who
Have tricked gullible liberals into giving them millions of dollars.
That's what they are. Yeah. And,
the new neocon wing of the Democrats.
Yes, they are the neocon. Yes. And Steve Schmidt, who's like one of the grossest people, who's like, trust me, it's easier for a sociopath to win than a socialist. He said that. And then there's Conway, right? What's his name?
George Conway. Child abuser.
Yes.
The child abuser.
Yeah. And then who else is in there? Rick Wilson, who's like
Rick
one
Wilson.
Of the worst, who asked Ann Coulter if she charged more for anal or something with Donald Trump, and calls Bernie like an old socialist. I'm like, sorry, Bernie could run circles around you, both intellectually, politically, but also physically. Because the guy, I'm just saying, don't bring up age. When you are, you just look like you live underground. I don't know what you look like. Anyway, he's terrible. Colbert, the Colbert Report did a great thing on him with Tune the News. Is that what it's called?
Oh, the Tune the News thing was
really
good.
It was really good. And they called out, they're like, wait, but we don't get it. You're a racist. So like Bush's racism is good, but Trump's racism is bad. So I'm going to play that video and then we're going to bring in our next guest. Okay, and I'm going to turn. Hold on 1 second. Let me just make this. I want to go off screen for a second.
Cool. Yeah, I'll be right back too.
Okay, great. Hold on 1 second. Self, can you? Well, let me just try this.
So, the Trump campaign wants to talk about China. Let's do it.
On the day President Trump signed his new Buy American, Hire American executive order, there are new questions involving his daughter's business and China.
And the identities of the Chinese companies Ivanka Trump's brand does business with have become more secretive than ever.
The Chinese government has given a preliminary green light to Ivanka Trump's company for 5 more trademarks.
Ivanka Trump is not commenting after China issued new trademarks for her fashion brand.
The Associated Press reports the Chinese government granted her company 3 new trademarks on April 6th. Hours later, she dined with the Chinese president at her father's Mar-a-Lago resort.
Why would China do this? Because they know Ivanka is just like her father, for sale.
Late last night, I had a very good talk with President Xi, and we talked mostly about the coronavirus. They're working really hard, and I think they're doing a very professional job.
Trump 2020, making China great again. Paid for by the Lincoln Project, who is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Oh my God. You know what's funniest about that? He was telling the truth about China. They did do a good job.
I know.
With COVID. But anyway.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing is like, I'm always like, the big liberal brain rot is like, Trump is an existential threat, Cito Mussolini, with dementia. And we would like him to be more belligerent with other countries. Like, just pick a narrative, guys. Anyway, so speaking of, belligerence on the field, how you like that? We're going to bring in Justin Jackson, who is an LA Chargers running back and also a big activist. He's become a real activist and a big force to vote activist. So welcome to the stream, Justin Jackson. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Katie.
Of course. Did I ask you if you could record your own audio?
Yeah, I think we're all good.
Awesome. Okay. Welcome to the show. This is Jack. I don't think you've been on Overlapped yet.
How's it going, Jack?
Yeah, good to see you.
And Margaret.
How you doing?
Hi.
I know you guys follow each other.
Yeah, we follow each other on Twitter, so preliminarily know each other.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on Biden and how excited, how over is racism? Is it like 100% over, or is it like 90% over?
It's fully over. You know, the crime bill guy's in office. The one who said you ain't black if you don't vote for him.
Yeah, right.
Racism, I mean, it's definitely over.
Yes. It's like, it's one thing you can be like, okay, he was wrong. I mean, it's totally not convincing, but like you can make the argument like that was a long time ago. It's like, no, telling people they're not black if you don't vote for you.
I wonder if the counter statement is also true. If he's saying you're not black if you don't vote for Biden, does that mean if you did, you are
you
black?
Are, right.
Right.
Does this mean that now every Biden voter gets to be black? I didn't vote for him, so I'm still a fucking white guy, of course. But
it's funny that the y'all were on Twitter today that the Biden lied was trending.
Yeah.
And all I could think about was the Nelson Mandela lie.
Oh, yes.
And the civil rights marching in the civil rights movement lie.
Yeah. Like,
two huge lies, but you know, you ain't black if you don't vote for him.
I think he said that when I have a feeling they were working on a drug cocktail for him all year long, and I think they hadn't quite gotten it right.
Right, they didn't get it right.
I think they
yet.
Did finally figure out the right level of amphetamines to get him on, at least to get him through the inauguration and then let him sleep for a full week.
I agree. I think that's it. Whenever he's not making an appearance, he's sleeping. And then pump him up with a lot of substance, yeah.
The funniest thing about Biden is that when he like acts like he really won the primary and that he really won this election as if he wasn't like not campaigning the entire time. He's like, I am the Democratic Party. Like, I beat the socialists.
The socialists, yeah.
God.
You get a cakewalk to that nomination.
No, Obama did that. I think that was all his hand.
Right. Yeah. Obama made a couple phone calls. That really is what it is. He made a couple phone calls in March.
Obama leaves his mansion to get Keith Ellison knocked out, a DNC chair. To tell the NBA not to strike.
Yeah, those are the big moves since he's been
windsurfing with Richard Branson.
Yeah,
and then knock Bernie out of the
program. Well, he's made a couple Netflix shows too.
That's
he's
true.
He's producing Netflix TV shows.
The speeches on Wall Street.
Yeah, did that too. Yeah.
Well, they bought a big house. That's what they do after they leave
The house, by the way. It's kind of sucky. I've seen the house and I'm like, it's just the backyard. There's no like plants. It's just like nothing but grass. I'm like, I guess rich people just always put up a bunch of tents and stuff like that for dinners. Right. But I'm like, why don't you have any like plants in the backyard?
I think it's probably security. It's probably like,
so that they can see anybody coming. Yeah.
Whatever. But yeah, he's doing what he's been the most active former president. I don't think George W. Bush was
painting.
Oh my God. You're just speaking of propaganda, you're bringing that horror back to me. But he's very much still the leader of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm. And, right, that's true.
Biden is president because he picked him.
Right. I mean, he was a great, as Biden said about Obama, he was a clean, articulate African-American guy.
Man.
I love that I was hearing some people in the media. They were like, well, you know, he always defended Biden always defended Barack Obama. It's like he was his vice president.
I know.
Like, that's not like that doesn't show character.
How brave.
Like he needed that was his boss. Like he needed. Yeah. It was like, what are you talking about?
As opposed to all the obstructionist vice presidents have had throughout history.
The devil's advocates who were like, I like you, Barack, but I'm going to push back a little bit. Yeah.
Very funny.
So what is the most frustrating thing, I guess, Justin, for you now? And if you could just give like a summary of your political radicalization.
Mostly I'd say 2016 was the first time I could vote. I was 20. I was still in college. I had a pretty elite liberal university. So politics. Yeah. Northwestern. So like it was, you know, you had that feeling that it was an election, and especially with Trump being the candidate. Being at that university, like it was talked about a lot. And that's when I kind of first started, I guess I was like, okay, I definitely don't want Trump, you know, obviously because of everything he's Trump. but I was like, I don't really know the other candidate. Like I grew up in a, you know, liberal household, but we never talked about politics. So that's kind of when I started doing more research, and I started on like cable news, and I learned that they quickly learned that they weren't talking about anything. And I couldn't really use anything they were saying to like try and convince people to not vote for Trump. So that's when I started going into like progressive media. That's pretty much where I got my start. But I was going to say the most frustrating thing so far for me has been just seeing all the apologists, right, for like not getting the checks immediately, the checks being lower. It's like there's always an excuse. And I'm like, this is going to be the next 4 years. There's going to be an excuse for everything. They're not going to get anything done. And there's going to be like, There's a funny chart going around on Twitter where it's like what stage you're at. Like, and right now we're in the like first 10 days. Inauguration just happened. He hasn't been there that long. And pretty soon we're going to be in the midterms are coming up. You can't criticize the Democrats. It's like it's going to be
this is the most important election of all time. If you want that $1,400, you need to vote for us in the midterms. I mean, if you want the $1,400, Mitch McConnell's trying to stop you from getting it. This is the most important election ever.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, were you guys surprised about the $1,400 and the tweet and or is that on brand?
It's on brand. I was not surprised. It was I was like, wow, the lies start really quickly.
I'm surprised at the brazenness. I am.
But that's what people should remember. That the brazenness, the openness of it. It's like, oh, did we say 2,000? No, we meant 600 plus 1,400.
Right.
2,000. And I know you're not getting it until April. If people don't remember anything else, you have to remember he just right out of the box, he started with the neoliberalism, the austerity, the determination to keep people living as precariously as possible.
Yeah.
I think I was just, I haven't been around the block, you know, enough to really expect this. Cause I did was like, okay, they're going to pass the 2,000 and they're probably not going to do anything else, but you know, it's super popular. They promised it. They're going to do it. I was even telling people like, yeah, they're probably going to pass it. Now, you know, I know better. Yeah. I know better now.
We can't forget who's the one who first raised the number 2,000. It was Trump.
Donald Trump. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And everybody fell in. That was actually one of the most embarrassing weekends I've ever seen the Democrats is when Trump said 2,000. They're all like, yeah, we agree. I mean, truly, what an absolutely pathetic party.
Yeah, they really, they let themselves be outflanked really on the left by Trump. It's really pathetic. Egg 64 says, Obama's American Factory on Netflix details a Chinese billionaire opening a factory in Ohio as a feel-good story, as if TPP never rolled off his lips.
Right.
The grossest thing Obama ever, well, one of the top 20 grossest things he ever did was when he went on Jimmy Fallon and did slow jam.
Slow jam the news
to TPP. Like he shilled for TPP. He pushed TPP. And even at one point it was like work. Like he used that in his slow jam about TPP.
Rihanna song.
Yeah. Right. Because he was talking about how he was going to give people jobs and work. And like, who's down with TPP? Yeah. You know me. It was so,
oh
gross.
My God.
Yeah.
TPP, that was one where members of Congress weren't allowed to read the legislation.
Yeah, right.
They had to go to a secret room and they couldn't carry it around with them.
Yeah, it's so gross. And people would say like, oh, Trump is the same. Bernie's the same as Trump because look, they're both against TPP. And I was like, you really don't understand how politics work. Like, people dislike things for very different reasons. And that's just embarrassing for Hillary Clinton, not actually for Bernie Sanders. Yeah. Phil points out the Roots had a hand in that. That's true. They were the ones
watching any of Obama with the roots. What a sad state of affairs. Yeah. What a sad state it is.
Yeah. So what has it been like? Like, have you alienated people from your, I don't mean, that sounds so accusatory. What's it been like? Because Justin, you came out as very pro force the vote. It was very polarizing. Right. And I say this as someone who had you on the show, had Jimmy on the show, Brianna Joy Gray, like, you know, co-hosted the Force the Vote town hall. And I keep getting shit about it. I felt like I had to, like Jack and I talked about this. I wasn't always happy with the way some of the Force the Vote discussion went, but I also don't think that like being pro force the vote should be a make you a pariah.
It turned very toxic, obviously. Yeah. Everyone could see that. But when I kind of got involved with it, the reason I did was I saw a lot of energy behind it. You know, I like saw, you know, Jimmy was pushing it, but then I saw Sam Cedar come out for it and I was like, whoa, they hate each other. So, you know, wow, we're actually, we're putting our beefs aside. You know, TYT came out for it. So I was like, oh my, this is getting some push. Like we can actually come together on this and you know, get a floor vote. Like we actually have a leverage point. And then it turned so toxic. And it was just really sad to see that even with Brianna Joy Gray's interview with Sam Cedar, it's like, I love debates, like debating strategy, debating tactics And it always comes back to Jimmy Dore, like every single time. It's just so frustrating to me because, like, are we really going to be putting people, like, singular people, one person in this entire country over a strategy, right? Like, that's what it felt like to me. And that's really frustrating because at the end of the day, who cares who one person or your personal beef with someone else? Like, we're trying to get healthcare for people. You know what I mean? And that was pretty upsetting for me.
Yeah. And did I assume that it made some people like galvanize some support for you, but also the opposite, right? It was.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure. And honestly, I don't really care about that. Yeah. I don't, because I'm just over here like fighting for what I believe is true and right. And whether someone likes me for that or not, I honestly could care less. I really can.
Speaking of which, do you feel any pressure, either of you, to prove that you're black by supporting Biden?
I'm over it. Well, I'm older than Justin, much older, and I went through this with Obama.
Yeah.
And it was horrible, actually. To be black and not an Obama fan. It was quite terrible. And people don't understand, and it's you know, there aren't many people who really pay attention to politics, who really pay attention to the news. And basically they know the surface. Okay, it's a Democrat, that's good. Ah, it's the first black president. And unless you had reached that level of political awareness, people were just going to go along with, I mean, talk about propaganda. Do you remember he was inaugurated on King's birthday? Do you remember that? It was horrible. It was just like equating this man with a president of the United States, the leader of the empire, with this man who was killed by the empire, who died because he fought for the people. That pressure exists. But my point is, I'm over it. You can't, having gone through that, nobody can try to intimidate me into supporting someone who said of the crime bill, what did he say? We do everything but hang you for jaywalking or something like that. Fuck. I don't think
I knew that part.
Yeah, and he would let you know he supported every single crime bill.
Right. Every major minor crime bill has the name of the senator from Delaware on it.
Yep.
He also lied about the man who killed his wife twice, at least. It's tragic. His wife was like in a car crash. But it wasn't the fault of the guy who ran into her car. And Biden would say, like, this is a guy who liked to drink his lunch instead of eat it. And he said that twice. And the daughter of the guy was like, he never had any evidence of that. No one who, like, they investigated that. He was never brought up on that. And it was very upsetting for this guy.
I mean, he's probably the most notorious liar. In the government right now, you know what I mean? Like, of course you get to be the president if that's the case.
Well, that was one of the things that was so upsetting about the Tara Reid thing, is that like everyone was calling her a liar and questioning her credibility. It's like, you know that Biden has told a lot of lies. Like, I guess Tara Reid should have run for president instead of accusing Biden of sexual assault.
Well, they would cover up her lies. That's
that's what would have happened. Sure.
But speaking of propaganda, I mean, the fact that Biden is president at all.
Yeah.
Talk about censorship and propaganda. I mean, his very presence in the office is the proof of that, and proof of this, you know, there people get upset. You can't say America has an oligarchy. Yeah, we do.
Right.
And his presence is proof of all those things.
Yeah. How much of your focus, both of you, I guess, is on foreign policy versus domestic? Like, how do you balance those things and decide what to focus on?
I'm very much interested in foreign policy, and it's an area that gets to be ignored. And unfortunately, a lot of people on the left, like with Bernie, you know, he would say all of the stick with the imperialist narrative of the U.S., Russiagate, and so forth, and Venezuela, you know, Chavez was a dead dictator, and so on. But there are very serious connections between foreign policy and domestic policy. I mean, the fact that military spending is 60% of the discretionary budget, it's literally why we can't have nice things. Mm-hmm. How do you talk about the need for infrastructure, healthcare, education, you name it, anything we don't have that we ought to have, it's the elephant in the room. How do you not talk about the $740 billion budget, the 800 military bases, the environment? The U.S. military is the world's biggest polluter. Right. And you're not going to have a different society at home. You're not going to have injustice around the world and then have justice at home. It's not going to work that way. You're either going to have it everywhere or nowhere. And I'm not trying to, you know, quote Dr. King, but I just mean that quite literally. You can't have police have U.S. soldiers allowed to kill people. Obama claiming the right to kill anybody he wanted, and then have justice with policing in this country. It's not going to happen.
Right. And you wrote about the storming of the Capitol, and you mentioned how it was the kind of the chickens coming home to roost.
It's what the U.S. does all over the world.
Yeah.
That the U.S. can decide that Venezuela's election was fake. And so we have to starve people into submission in Venezuela. Or Ukraine. Does anybody ever point out the president of Ukraine was elected and the U.S. sided with people who are actual Nazis to get rid of him? So many countries, that Cuba. How does the United States decide that Cuba gets to be economically strangled for 60 years and to put people in office and take people out of office? This is what the U.S. does all the time. So this, you know, whatever it is you want to call it, insurrection, coup attempt, whatever, it's what the U.S. does successfully all over the world.
Yeah, the only thing that's different about this coup attempt is that it wasn't a foreign government running it. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't really get, like, assistance. Although, to be honest with you, it was there were people that knew about it in the intelligence agencies. So maybe it is similar to all the other coup attempts, to be honest with you.
Right, yeah.
That Proud Boys leader guy was, like, a big-time FBI informant. And I'm like, I read that article, and I was like, okay, like, informant? I'm like, he knows all these people at the FBI. I'm like, the Proud Boys is, like, FBI affiliated, if you ask my opinion on that particular article.
Yeah,
I haven't read that. I have to read that.
It was I was not surprised. They kept talking about, well, the leader of the Proud Boys is an Afro-Latino, so they're not racist.
All of a sudden he's an FBI asset.
For me, it's a big thing. It really is. And I think it's the thing that frustrates me the most, is that in America, it seems like we live in such a bubble that we have no earthly clue what we're doing. Like, I bet you if you polled a majority of Americans, they would have no idea, one, what countries were bombing. They wouldn't even be able to point those countries out on a map.
Right.
And then that's what's so horrifying about it. And I, like I said, like Margaret said, I think it does affect, you know, our domestic policy. And the thing that has been most frustrating for me about the progressives in Congress is they really are completely in lockstep with the leadership of the party on Venezuela, on a lot of these foreign policy issues that they should be, you know, up on. They should be fighting, for leftist ideas on that. But in reality, they're just neoliberals on foreign policy at the end of the day, which is super unfortunate.
It's been a long time since there were any real lefties in Congress. I mean, I'm old enough to remember there were always like a couple real lefties in Congress who would speak out against U.S. foreign policy. Apparently, that's not going to happen anymore. They all just march in lockstep. There was a point when members of Congress broke on the issue of Vietnam or spoke out against the first invasion of Iraq. And now, no one. Well, they've gotten rid of them, so everybody got the message.
Right, yeah. I mean, obviously everyone knows I'm a huge Bernie fan, but I'm very disappointed in his, like, you know, standing the 1400 thing. I do think that there's a difference between Bernie Sanders and some of the squad. Like, I don't like that if Rania Kallik tweets something that AOC retweets, then AOC unretweets it. Like, that's not okay. And that shows a real, lack of spine, honestly. Because all you have are these, like, you know, CIA cutout people, like, swarming on any politician who dares to retweet someone like Rania or Max. It's so ridiculous. Mm. It's so embarrassing. But I do think that there's a difference. Like, I think that there's a difference between, especially on something like sanctions. I don't not have belief that they could be pushed to do the right thing the way I do have a disbelief about other Dems. I think, like, Sanders has moved up to the left a lot on the Israeli-Palestinian stuff. So, and again, I'm saying this, like, and Ilhan Omar is really good on some things, you know, when she mm-hmm. went after Elliot Abrams.
It's like piecemeal.
Not Elliot Abrams, yes, sorry. What's his name?
I think it's Elliot Abrams, yeah. Yeah,
Elliot Abrams was also the guy, who's the guy who, White Hawk Down, the hawk who was beat by, I call him White Hawk Down when he lost to Jamal Bowman.
Engel?
Yes, Engel. Right. Elliot Engels, right? Okay, yeah, Elliot Engels, Elliot Abrams. Guys, I can say that. I can confuse those two. Yeah. But I do think, like, I think we can, because I actually really think that with imperialism, it makes, there's like such a concrete difference, like there's such a ripple effect. And again, no one is where they should be. But I guess I think that some squad people, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and I bet, and I think, didn't Cori Bush come out for BDS? So I'm just, I think she did, or she said something that, but I guess on that, like, I really do feel like as much as I'm tempted to be like, oh, all these people are neoliberals, and they are in many ways, I do think that there's the potential to move them.
I think it might be there. I think that's the area where they most get swept up in the media swarm. Like,
yeah,
they're
agree,
very afraid for the media to be against mm-hmm. them on foreign policy. Yep. So if they're not super knowledgeable about that, they're like AOC said, they're going to defer to leadership.
Sure, right, which you can't do in this case, yeah.
Right, which in this case is not, you can't do that.
Right,
yeah. But that's on us, is I think.
I know.
All this talk of moving people left, we have to make the effort. And mm-hmm. as I was saying earlier, be as determined to take public stances as people on the right are. Because I think on the issue of sanctions, for example, I don't know that most Americans know that 50,000 Venezuelans have been killed by sanctions, that people in Iran and Syria can't get medicine. I don't think people know that.
They don't think of it as violent.
And I don't know how much attention members of Congress pay.
Right.
So that's where the movement needs to take up.
Yeah, that's a really interesting and important point, because I think that, like, I hate the mainstream media more than, like, most. I mean, I hate, in fact, we didn't look at any clips, Jack, today. We were derelict.
Oh, wow.
But, like, we'll try to find some. But, like, I mean, and again, as someone who loves Bernie, not uncritically, but he was such an he was such a symbol of the media bias, because it was just the contempt mm-hmm. for him. Saying on mm-hmm. MSNBC, he makes my skin crawl, mm-hmm. You know, saying he had a, can you just imagine for a second if Bernie, well, he's Jewish, this would, and he's pro-choice, so neither of these would happen, but, like, when Jen Psaki gets asked about Biden's position on the Hyde Amendment, and her answer is he's a devout Catholic, like, where are the people talking about his gender problem, his abortion problem, his social issues problem? I guess, to be fair, Biden's so bad on everything, it doesn't stand out. Whereas with Bernie, they lied and had to pretend he had a gender issue because he was so obviously good on economic stuff.
Obviously, Biden doesn't threaten capital. That's, like, all it is. Like, Biden doesn't threaten capital and also doesn't make... But doesn't make these people feel like, he either threatens capital and then also makes these people feel guilty for selling out as hard as they did. You know what I mean? Like, Bernie makes mainstream media people feel like liberals feel like shit because he's a senator who never was like, oh, we have to, you know, we have to go move the line back and everything like that. Like either they just want to protect capital or they're like feeling guilty that they sold out. And Bernie reminds them of that.
Right.
Biden's easy. Biden's easy to like if you're in the media.
Right.
Sure. Well, they know who their bosses. Everybody does what their bosses want them to.
Yeah.
And they know what their bosses want them to say. So Biden good, Bernie bad.
Right.
And frankly, also, like, whether or not they know what their bosses want them to say, the bosses are the ones that hire people. You know what I mean?
Yes,
so
they're only hiring at that level.
You know what I mean? It all filters both ways, you know.
Yeah. And the fact that there are fewer and fewer jobs in media,
mm-hmm.
I think leads to more and more craven behavior.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, you've gotten the brass ring if you're actually being paid and employed.
Right.
Right.
And you think of yourself as on the inside versus everyone else on the outside.
Yes.
You're making, and if you're in televised media, you're really making a lot of money and, you know, you're in New York
and you can delude a building
where you get to have a key card that gets you in the elevator and you're so far away from all the hoi polloi.
Right. And you can, I think, delude yourself into thinking like, I'm a progressive. I have my foot in the door. I'm going to like make sure that I'm going to bring that perspective, but you can't. Natalia Viana, who is a Brazilian journalist, who was the first person to have access to WikiLeaks, the Brazilian WikiLeaks, or she was saying how Julian Assange, for instance, because I think people don't get that censorship is often not like red pen censorship, and it's often self-censorship, and it's often like a natural selection, like on the level of hires. But she was saying that, you know, because Max Blumenthal reported on how these journalists were spied on, like when they went to visit Assange, when they reported on Assange, and not most of them, like Stefania Maritzi did, but most of them didn't sue or didn't care or didn't even mention it. Like the Washington Post person, a big foreign policy person, national security person, didn't mention it. And I asked Natalia why she thought that was. And she was saying that, like, because he's a threat to the gatekeepers, like Julian, this, like WikiLeaks as a project is a threat to the gatekeepers. So journalists, like, they don't have to be told that their bosses don't want this to be covered or for him to be. I mean, that is just a disgusting thing, the Julian Assange thing.
It's also a social, it's also just becomes a social thing. Like, listen, I worked in fucking, not in news media, but I was working in like network television during the 2016 election. And that's one of the big reasons why I had to quit that year, was seeing how white rich liberals acted in the 2016 election. Like, you know, like this, it's a cultural thing. You know what I mean? Like, it becomes a cultural thing, and it's almost hard to like understand, you know, the difference, like the different culture of the white and wealthy in America. But they really do feel like they're good people because they make donations. Right.
Well, they, and you, you touched on something else. Journalism is now a profession of the elite. So all these people went to the best read expensive schools. They get these jobs because of who their parents are. They do not represent a cross section of the country. So, you know, and these politicians are their friends and their parents' friends.
And they went to the school together. Or
exactly.
Together,
yeah. So we, you know, it's difficult to expect them to act otherwise.
Right.
And I'd say since 2016, it's really turned into just entertainment news.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, which, I mean, I don't think it'll ever go back.
But Fox is at least entertaining.
Which put Trump into office. I don't think we can repeat enough. They gave him, is it $4 billion in free advertising? They didn't think he was going to win.
Right.
But they gave it to him. What did Les Moonves says? I don't know.
Good if this for is ratings, good. Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's good for America, but he's good for CBS.
Trump called Jeff Zucker his personal booker during the 2016 election. Too, that's the president of CNN.
It's ridiculous. And I think that what you said before, Margaret, where it's on us, that's something like that's hard to grapple with, but we kind of do. And it's really not fun. It's not fun to take like a look at like, what do we have to do? But we do, because like, that is how it's going to happen. Like, it's like if we... I often feel like there's a tension, because the same people who get that politicians don't respond to anything but political pain, we also understandably like don't want to particularly look at what we're failing to do, because like the people with the blood on their hands are not us. But we actually, if we care about the blood on their hands, like we do have to push and we have to rally. And there is a real issue of courage, like not to sound corny, but there is courage. Like we... need to not be afraid of, you know, I constantly bring up Rania and Max just because they're people who I know a lot of people don't want to elevate or platform their work, and they don't have any real reasons for it. It's because they're toxic, they're problematic, guilt by association, they're Assadists, they're that. And what they wind up doing in not platforming them, i.e. like, you know, freezing them out, or not focusing on their work, is they're just doing the work of empire. Like, that's literally what they're doing. Yep. Because these are, I mean, and you also are one of the few voices, you, Margaret, Lee Camp.
Well, you know, and this is where the propaganda works. Right. All you do is, first of all, you just cut people out.
Yeah.
So out, Max and Aaron Maté, they tell us that there are whistleblowers at the OPCW who say Syria did gas these people. But you don't see it anywhere unless you know who to follow. You have no idea that this is true. And Wikipedia censors them.
Yeah.
So even if somebody is interested in following up on their reporting, they don't want to be punished also.
Exactly, right. Which is why the more, like, why, I've said this before, but, like, I used to get this, like, visceral feeling. I can feel it when I feel a peer pressure, like, peer pressure to not have someone on the show, not share someone's, like, article. And I just have to, like, you know, reject it and, like, check myself, because it is pressure and it is an amorphous thing and you're not totally aware of it. But I do. I have a physical feeling about it. And, like, the more, it's like the same, you know, it's like unions. It's like the power of numbers. Like, the more people refuse to throw other people under the bus, or the more people, like, elevate certain things and certain people, the less fringe it becomes and the less scary it becomes. And what I think we see so much is that, like, a few people are willing to say something or write something or talk about something. And because they are, like, smeared, Matt Taibbi calls it the ick factor, right? Because they're smeared, other people don't want to go there. And then it's like this cycle of, it becomes like very few people are going there. So then you think it really is a radical fringe position when it's not. Like, it is not radical to say that there were, you brought this up, Margaret, that there was a basically WMD's cover-up scandal with Syria. And that Aaron Maté was asked and allowed to speak at the UN. Like, this is not some, like, chemtrails type of thing. Like, he addressed the UN about this, and there were whistleblowers who talked about this. And, like, don't people remember, like, the Iraq stuff? How much of a parallel do you need? I don't care what you think about Assad. I don't care what you think about Saddam Hussein. The question is, like, what should we be doing there? And should we be critical and skeptical of things about weapons that may not be true? It's just like, I'm sorry. Get really angry about it, but yeah. Well, Margaret, I know you have to leave soon.
I do.
But thank you so much for staying up with us. This was so
great. Thanks. Very nice. Very. It was good to see you both again.
Yes.
Nice
good to see you. Yeah.
Meet you in quotes, Justin.
Yeah. Nice to meet you. off of online.
Yeah. Okay. But thanks again, Margaret. And come back again.
All right.
Bye, Margaret.
She's so funny, by the way. We didn't get to, like, you could tell a little bit from this chat, but everyone has to follow her on Twitter. What is it? It's Freedom Rider. Is it just spelled out Freedom Rider, right? She's brutal.
Freedom Ride Blog.
Freedom Ride Blog. Freedom Ride Blog. You and Leslie are, like, the two really, like, you don't seem as, like, brutal in a good way. Like, you're both very smiley, Leslie Lee and you. And then it's just like, forget it. Like, no, it's like scorched earth on Twitter. It's so funny. They're both hilarious. So anyway, thank you have a good company.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks. Alrighty. So, Justin, some questions for you.
Okay.
Alrighty. Thomas, what is CA? What currency is that?
Canadian.
Oh, great. Wow. Thank you. Q for JJ. On second down with you. And to hear Justin Jackson respond to that question and many other questions, as well as talk about a little respectful online beef he got into with some journalists and members of Congress, please become Patreon supporters at patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. We will also be releasing a discussion with Breonna Joy Gray about the significance of Bernie Sanders' mittens, as well as what book Bernie would have sworn in on had he been elected president, and what accents are acceptable for whom to do. And I showcase some of my own accents. Also, we are doing an emergency broadcast tonight, Tuesday night at 8 p.m. EST, and that will be on youtube.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's youtube.com/thekatiehalpershow. Writer and, perhaps more importantly, writing instructor Kate Levin will be joining me, and we are going to be breaking down an incredibly important piece written by Ingrid Sayer Oki, and it's called Bernie's Mittens: A Lesson for San Francisco High School Students in Subtle White Privilege. And that was published at the San Francisco Chronicle. So Kate Levin and I will be going over this almost brilliant if it were parody, not so brilliant because it's sincere, op-ed. The Katie Halpern Show is edited by Ted Reedy, Dorsey Shaw, and Bradley Bloom. Our researcher is Joshua Bregman, and our theme song is by the band Cordova. And you can follow Justin on Twitter at J_ManPrime. See you next time.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.